fire marshal, the Oregon State Police, emergency services, and possibly some others. Were you aware of that proposal when you prepared your testimony?
I was not aware of that proposal. I knew that there was concern about where the fire marshal's office would go, and there were some concerns about the perceived lack of fit between some of these regulatory functions in the Department of Commerce. And I think that those are similar concerns, and obviously there's more than one good idea, you might say, around as to how to address them.
Yeah.
I think they do reflect that basic discomfort with that, with groupings that don't seem to fit.
So you're not necessarily opposing a Department of Public Safety if that, in fact, is done?
No. The only thing I would point out is it would not resolve the particular problems that I mentioned that relate to the training requirements in preparation for licensing and the licensing, and the fact that these used to be together, and since they've been divergent since 71, some problems have emerged, and that would not be dealt with. The only concern, and I think one of the concerns we had was, even if we could separate out just those that related to apprenticeship programs, it would be a very difficult transition at this point because of the way over the years that licensing fees have become an underpinning of the programs and building codes. So that was the argument for keeping, one of the arguments for keeping them all together.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you very much, Commissioner Roberts.
Thank you for the courtesy, Senator Hill, members of the committee. Thank you.
We'll now close our hearing
99 home.
Senate Bill 1034. We'll now move into work session on House Bill 2599. And a representative, Jolin.
Really ambivalent feelings about that. Even that way, that's just. But anyway, if you want me to, we'll find out what you have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I lost my amendment, and I had to go out in the hall and get it.
All right.
Through deliberations and the art of compromise, to put it bluntly, I have come up with language that I believe, I know is acceptable for me, contained in HB 2599A-11. And I have shared those amendments with the members of your committee. And I believe that, I'll certainly let John respond, but I believe that they are also acceptable to him.
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. My name is John Steubenball. I'm with Osberg. Mr. Chair, we believe that House Bill 2599A, as you see it before you now, is a good bill, but if it is the feeling of this committee that the bill should be amended, we would favor the dash amendment, dash 11 amendments from Representative Jolin's office.
Any discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, has everybody got that amendment?
Yes, the dash 11 amendments. I assume that everyone has.
It's attached to this bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, the chair would then move the House Bill 2599A-11 amendments. Describes LC 2217, dated 5/25/87. Any discussion?
I think they're a good idea.
Not the clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Frye?
Aye.
Kenner? Aye.
Simmons?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Well, the chair would move House Bill 2599 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Simmons.
As I indicated this morning, I have a little bit of a problem with a law that sets up attorney's fees for only one party and rather than the prevailing party. And I don't know if that can be resolved in this or not. I've had some personal experience with frivolous lawsuits brought against me, and it's cost me considerable money to defend them, and I have no recourse.
Yes, I remember that discussion.
Well, Mr. Chair, keep this moving along.
Yes, please. Well, we just call for the question. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Frye?
Aye.
Kennemer?
Aye.
Simmons?
No.
Hill?
Aye. Passes. Volunteers for House Bill. Senator Frye will carry House Bill 2599.
Thank you.
Thank
Welcome.
You.
I didn't mean to move the bill along. I mean, I was going to respond to what Senator Simmons said. I didn't mean to cut his. I didn't mean to cut his concern off with that comment. I was going to respond to what he said, but I, you know, it's done now. So.
Senator Simmons, were there any amendments you'd like to have offered on that bill? We'll bring it back if you'd like.
Well, only that. And I don't know the wording, but that the attorney's fees would be awarded to prevailing party.
Well, I wouldn't, Mr. Chair.
Senator Frye.
What I was going to say earlier, and again, I should have kept quiet, but I didn't want Senator Simmons to feel that I was butting in here on his concern. And I think that there are similar concerns have been expressed over past sessions, but there is a decided distinction between this type of a cause of action and those to which you have yourself been involved in and to which you have referred, and that is that the legislature has established a long time ago that there are certain kinds of interests that need to be resolved in the courts of the state, and in order to encourage the resolution of those kinds of things, both in the federal courts, for example, under the Civil Rights Act, and in the state legislature, we have said pretty much that if there is a real public interest involved in some of these situations, we're going to provide that to encourage people to bring claims in court that we will provide if they prevail or entitle reasonable attorney fees. You're going to chill the public interest that exists in many of these issues if a person feels that he's going to risk having to pay attorney fees and costs. So it's a policy question, but it prevails in many, many, many of our statutes. All the civil rights statutes provide for reasonable attorney fees if the party prevails, but do not put that potential onus on the party if the party loses. And the reason is simply to encourage these great issues of public concern to be litigated. That's the theory behind it.
Well, thank you for the explanation. I can see the logic in that. I guess that my own experiences have somewhat soured me upon the justice of one party, if he prevails, being reimbursed and the other one not. And I don't want to upset the vote of the committee, but obviously I can't. But I did want to be heard on it.
Thank you very much, Senator Simmons. And my apologies, Senator Simmons, for cutting off.
No, I understood how it was done. No problem.
Thank you, Senator Simmons. Yes, we'll now move into our work session on Senate Bill 1032. The DVA bill, and I will call forth Tim Lamison and Corey Reisinger to deal with the amendments that have been proposed to DVA to the House Bill 1032. I'm sorry, Mr. Mangus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Tom Imeson from the Governor's Office, and with me today is Corey Streisinger, the Governor's Legal Counsel, and John Mangus, Director of the Department of Veterans Affairs. Mr. Chairman, we've testified before on the legislation, Senate Bill 1032, which would create a Veterans Affairs Commission, and don't intend to repeat the previous testimony on the need for the legislation. We have been working during these past several weeks since we appeared before you previously with you, members of the committee, members of the House, other interested parties in the development of amendments to the legislation. We brought those amendments to you today for your consideration. Our goal remains to establish a Veterans Affairs Commission and to provide a series of financial and other tools that are provided both in this and in other legislation that's already been approved by the committee. I think the amendments before you improve the bill. They spell out the kind of legislative involvement that is contemplated. In particular, there's been discussion of a feature of the legislation which would allow the commission to look at third-party servicing of the home loan program, and the amendments specify the process by which any contract developed would be brought back through to the legislature in the event that that occurs. I'd like to ask Corey Streisinger to discuss each of the amendments with your permission so that she can run through those for you and for the committee.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Corey Streisinger, the Governor's Legal Counsel. The amendments you have in front of you are the Dash 4 amendments. They incorporate some amendments that you've seen previously, and they add additional amendments that were the process of the meetings that Mr. Imeson outlined. I believe members of the committee should also have a hand-engrossed version with the Dash 4 amendments in front of you. Mm-hmm. The amendments do a number of things. First, with respect to the proposed Veterans Affairs Commission, they add a statement of purpose for that commission. That was a point that was expressed by some members of the committee during a prior hearing. The commission's purposes are stated to be management of the program, the loan program, in an effective manner, the taking of steps to restore the loan program to financial health, and also the protection of the welfare of veterans, which is, of course, the purpose of the veterans' laws in general. The committee's or the commission's membership has been altered somewhat by these amendments. Two legislators have been added as non-voting members. The requirement that they be non-voting is a constitutional one dealing with separation of powers, but in all other respects, they are full members of the commission. In addition, the state treasurer will serve as a member of the commission. And the original bill provided one veteran member. These amendments increase that to at least two, and of course, there can be more. Third, there was some discussion at our prior hearing on this bill as to the rulemaking relationship between the Commission and the Director of Veterans Affairs. These amendments make the Veterans Affairs Commission operate in the same manner that the Transportation Commission now operates. Rulemaking authority is vested in the Commission itself, but can be delegated in writing to the Director. That is the structure that the Transportation Commission has adopted, and it seems to work pretty well in that context. Fourth, the amendments spell out that a number of standard procedural laws that apply to public agencies in general will also apply to this commission. It's always been, of course, I think everybody's intent that they apply. They do apply in general anyway, and this bill simply reaffirms that they apply to the commission. Those are, for example, the public meetings laws, the Administrative Procedure Act dealing with the adoption of rules, the public contracting laws, and so those have now been specified in the bill. The next couple of changes in this set of amendments deal with specific financial tools which are going to be given to the commission. And as Mr. Imeson indicated, a number of tools have already been adopted by this committee in prior bills. There's a new Section 6A added to the bill, which comes from Senate Bill 334. That adds to the package of financial tools that the department has. It adds additional ways of managing the department's assets. In addition, contracting out authority, as the committee is aware, is in this bill. There are several amendments to the procedures for adopting contracting out. There is an explicit requirement of a cost-benefit study in these amendments, and there is a requirement that of emergency board approval if public contracting is or contracting out is being contemplated while the legislature is not in session. I believe the committee is aware, the intent is that the legislative members of the commission would be intimately involved in the emergency board process, and I believe an interim committee may be being considered by this body as well. We encourage by these amendments as much legislative input into this process as possible. We think these are crucial decisions. It's very important to have all levels of government involved in them. The final amendment contained in the Dash 4 amendments is a change in the sunset date. There was some concern expressed by this committee previously that the initial 2 years of operation for the commission could not possibly be long enough, and the sunset date is changed in these amendments to 1991, so it would be a 4-year operation. I believe that outlines pretty much the amendments that are contained, and I'd be glad to answer questions on any of the specifics.
Or entertain questions. Mr. Mangus? You don't have anything you'd like to add?
Thank you, Senator Hill, members of the committee. I'm here to help address any questions that the committee may have.
Mic over to.
I'm here only today to try to address any questions the committee may have regarding Senate Bill 1032 or regarding the operation of the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Thank you. Mr. President, I'd like to, before entertaining questions, the Senate President has a letter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've had a letter distributed to you. Yeah, thank you. From the Speaker and myself, that speaks to a discussion we had earlier this week between yourself and Representative Burton. And the letter essentially states our intention to appoint a joint interim committee on Veterans Affairs to look into the whole financial and administrative structure of that system and to make recommendations to the 1989 legislature for possible action. The letter in no way is intended to imply that the governor is not going to move forward aggressively with all the tools that he has available to him to rectify the problems of the program during the interim. The letter further states that the co-chairpersons of the joint interim committee will be the two non-voting members of the Veterans Affairs Commission that this bill creates, and finally that members of that committee will serve as ex officio members of an emergency board subcommittee should any public contracting take place during the interim and require emergency board approval.
Are there any questions? Thank you very much, John. Are there any questions of Ms. Amundson or Ms. Streisinger?
Yes.
Senator Kinnemer.
I have a number of questions here. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Amundson, these members of the commission, will they be paid for their services?
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kennermore, this commission would be created in the same manner as most of the other commissions, LCDC, for example, and they would not be paid beyond the normal per diem that's provided.
Following up on that, I guess this raises one of my concerns in the very first amendment here. Continuing on with line 9 there, it says the goals of this commission shall be to, quote, manage, and then later on to direct. And I'm wondering, on a part-time basis and on a non-remunerated basis, if we're anticipating that kind of level of management and responsibility, and I wanted to understand what you thought this implied. And it seems to me like it takes away the director's responsibility, and I guess let me editorialize it a tiny bit. It's my sense about commissions is that they are there to provide direction and policy, and we have management staff to do management and direction at another level, and I wanted to understand what these words meant.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kennemer, the management that's referred to here in the amendment is of the loan program, not of the day-to-day Department of Veterans Affairs management. We think that it's important to have this sort of a commission in place to help to develop policy to improve the management of that loan program, to help determine the use of some of the tools that are being provided through this and other pieces of legislation. It's not meant to manage on a day-to-day basis to replace the director's function in managing the department.
I guess just to register my concern about that, it seems to me like better language might be like to review and guide or something. It sounds like that's more of what you're saying. I don't know whether that makes any sense to you or not. It raises some concerns for me.
If I might respond, Mr. Chair, Senator Kennemer, I think the idea is that we do want the commission to have hands-on management, but they can delegate as much or as little as of their powers as they feel possible. We don't want them to be removed from this process. And we do expect that it will require some time commitment, but I think we have been fortunate in this state in the past in having the ability to have essentially volunteers put that kind of time in. We would be concerned about language of the type you mentioned simply because it would remove the commission from the direct ability to affect this program.
Any further questions, Senator?
Yes, I do. One more question. Thank you. On page 1A, the next page, talking about in case of a vacancy, it says that then the governor or the speaker or the president may make an appointment to become effective immediately. And I wondered why not waiting for some confirmation as we ordinarily do in other appointments. Understand your rationale there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kennemer, I must confess that I hadn't focused on those particular words. These were drafted by legislative counsel after discussions with us and with the members of the committee. I think the intent is to have Senate confirmation. It is spelled out in subsection 7 immediately above that on the page. I suppose members of the commission could be appointed on an acting basis.
Senator Coleman.
I think just write immediately upon and or upon Senate confirmation.
It seems to me like it would have to have that addition. Otherwise, it looks to me like it's a new section.
We have no objection to that.
Defer to counsel or whatever. It just seemed to me to be that.
Would you, where is that again, Senator Kennemer?
On the hand engrossed is section 8 on page 2. In the last sentence there, become effective immediately upon confirmation. Senate confirmation, I guess it should have added.
Thank you very much, Senator Kennemer. Any further questions? Senator Simmons.
Mr. Chair, I guess I share Senator Kennemer's concern about the investigating and directing the implication of strategies and to managing the program. I know that a 5-person commission or 7-person who have their own means of making a living aren't going to spend an awful lot of time, and this is a $5 billion project that does take time. I wonder on a more specific thing. On page 1A, which would be about line between 20 and 21, no, I'm sorry, it's page 2, page 2A, sub 6, ORS 279.021 and 291.021 apply to personal services contracts authorized by this section. It seems to me we've passed a couple of bills that exempted the repair and maintenance of foreclosed properties and the selection of a real estate agent to sell the properties from the provisions. I believe these are the personal service contract and public contracting laws, 279 and 291.
Senator Hill, Senator Simmons, that's correct.
So would this then negate the laws that we've passed regarding those two areas?
Mr. Chair, Senator Simmons, the intent is for this section to apply to a personal services, or rather a loan servicing contract, as specified in this section. Perhaps that would be clearer if the words loan servicing contracts rather than personal services contracts were used in subsections.
Yeah, because back in the list of things that the commission is authorized to do are processing of new loans and purchase contracts, management and servicing of new and existing loans, non-judicial enforcement, management and sale of properties, and other categories that they see fit, or including but not limited to the following. So it would almost seem to be a conflict there between anything else that that is not done by a loan servicing contractor if one is appointed to do the whole thing. I wouldn't want to foreclose the carrying out of the laws we've enacted regarding sales of property. And I guess I have a little bit of problem determining what non-judicial enforcement of loan terms how, and I guess without knowing who and under what terms the loan servicing contract will be made with, and under how far the loan servicing would go, would it include the sale of foreclosed properties? Would it be a collection of an account until it became delinquent, or until it required legal action, or until it required foreclosure? I mean, these are these are areas that are somewhat in a unspecified field now that we really don't have too much basis to judge now.
Mr. Chair, Senator Simmons, if I could respond. Under this bill, those tools would be available and could be made part of a loan servicing contract. Any such contract would then have to come back to the emergency board for approval. So there would be a chance for this body, or at least a subgroup of this body, to take a look at the actual terms negotiated, and then this bill would require that any loan servicing contractor comply with those terms. So at this point, what this bill does is it authorizes the negotiations of a contract, and it sets out the parameters in which such a contract would be negotiated, but the specifics will be back here again.
Well, back to the E-Board, which can't really enact legislation excluding contracts from the 279 or the 291. I can see where this might be applicable to your primary contract, but in event that there is no primary contract for loan servicing and the feasibility study determines that it's more practical for the DVA to pull in its horns and increase its efficiency and do its own collecting at a better return to the state than contracting out, and this is where there is a conflict between the two.
My suggestion, Senator Simmons, Mr. Chair, would be to in subsection 6 on page 2A of the Hand and Gross version to change the words personal services contracts to loan servicing contracts, which I believe would take care of that problem.
Well, then then they could still enter into a contract for processing of new loans or management or sale of properties.
Those would be defined as a personal service. If those were to be carried out by a private contractor, this section would apply.
To the chairman, to the committee, we've also noted the change suggested by Senator Simmons, how the foregoing would not include the debt management of the DVA program. Referring that to Legislative Council for proper wording.
And also the language concerning Senate confirmation.
Upon Senate confirmation, I saw that in at least one place, maybe another one. Section 8.
Sub 8 of Section
2. Yes, sub 8.
Sub 8 of Section 2.
And Mr. Chair, one other additional language change that was discussed was the substitution of the words loan servicing contracts for personal services contracts in subsection 6 on page 2A.
Yes, I have that one, too. Wait, just...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's on 2A of the...
On page 2A, subsection 6 of section 6.
Mm-hmm. With those changes noted, the Chair would move... the amendments identified as 664A-4. I'm sorry, 664. Senate Bill 1032-4 amendments dated 5/27/87. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
All right. Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 1032 as amended to the floor, a due pass recommendation.
Senator Fry moves Senate Bill 1032 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Not. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Cohen?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye.
Hammer?
Aye.
Simmons?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye. So ordered. Senator Hill will carry it. All right, now we'll close our work session on Senate Bill 1032. And now move into a brief work session, as I understand it, on Senate Bill 641. And I'd like to call forth
Steve Wynn.
Steve Wynn.
Kurt Glees.
Kurt Glees.
And it's one other gentleman with him.
General, I have to ask you to be very brief in your testimony, as we have still a great deal to do this afternoon. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Steve Wynn. I'm the chairman of the Securities Regulation Section of the Oregon State Bar. We were pleased to be afforded the opportunity by you to review proposed Senate Bill 641 relating to anti-takeover statutes with the state of Oregon. The securities and corporate law sections of the bar established a joint ad hoc committee to look at the bill. We have prepared, under Mr. John Halley's direction, a series of proposed amendments to the bill, which he'd like to review with you briefly. I think you'll find them consistent with the tone and tenor and substance of the bill, but we think that there are some were some serious drafting problems with it that we think we've corrected.
Okay. No, I guess the first thing I'd like to do, we discussed this very briefly previously. I guess I'd like to ask you, how do you feel about this idea in general? Is it anything that you feel is needed at all?
In general, the view on the ad hoc.
Identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry, John Halley. General view on the panel in the two fairly brief sessions we had was that we were generally in favor of something like this. We have some reservations about a recommendation only because we have, in the time allotted to us, been unable to either poll other members of the bar or discuss the matter with interested clients. And have not had a chance to review the bill as carefully as we would wanted to make recommendations.
How much time would you think you'd need to do that?
Anybody have any idea? A couple of weeks, probably.
A couple of weeks. Well, this is not, to me, this is an important piece of legislation. I mean, the effects of it could be far-reaching, and it's not anything that I'd like to do. Now, I can get, I'm not sure we'll even be here in 2 weeks, but quite clearly, I would like to give you the opportunity to do things as carefully as you would like. Now, I don't know if we need to take up the committee's time with this now, but what I would like to do then is give you the opportunity, and if you could cut it down from 2 weeks, it would be fine. I consider this to be something that could have some far-reaching impact, and I certainly would not want to do anything to hurt the financial community of the state. So with that in mind, I could, if you'd like to take that time to do it and come back really with a polished work product and get in contact with us as soon as possible, maybe that would be the best way to proceed.
And I think we would very much appreciate that opportunity.
All right. Then what we'll do then is we have your proposed amendments before us. And rather than take the committee's time with it now, if you have something else you'd like to state, but we can look over the amendments and give you some time to really research this as thoroughly as possible. And if not, there's always next session. I think the bill is important. Frankly, if it's something that's needed to be enacted, because we'll miss a lot of time without having the bill. But if there's something else you'd like to add, please go ahead.
We'd only like to add one thing, and that is that we believe that it is important, if it's possible to do right, for the legislature to consider it in this session in view of the speed with which we think other legislatures may be considering it and the relative position in which that will be putting Oregon corporations if lots of other states enact it quickly.
Okay. Gentlemen, is there anything else that you'd like? I have written testimony here. Kenneth
Ergenhand, Chairman.
Yes. Sir, would you like to summarize your testimony for the record?
Well, I can do it very briefly, Mr. Chairman. I'm not really a member of the ad hoc committee, as I indicated in the written testimony. I'm a lawyer in Portland, and my practice involves takeovers, hostile takeovers on occasion. I've done perhaps five or six of them on both sides, both for the Raider and for the Target Company.
Yeah.
And my view on this is that they are, I've indicated, a coercive, they are by their nature coercive because the public shareholder is in the position of either tendering whether he thinks the price is right or holding on to the stock. If he holds on to the stock and the tender is successful, then he ends up in a minority position in a company that may not be liquid. It may be something like Evans Products is now with Mr. Posner in charge. Or he may be facing a freeze-out merger for junk bonds in 3 or 4 months. So what this bill does is gives the independent shareholders, not the management of the Target Company and not the Raider, a chance to vote as to whether or not they like the tender offer. Tender offers are made subject to conditions. They can't close for really 30 days after they're made under federal law. So a Raider If he thinks he has a good price, we'll make the tender offer. We'll be conditioned upon the shareholders voting in favor of the tender offer. Now, that's a vote by the independent shareholders, not management and not the raider. And if they think the price is good, they'll vote for it. And then the tender offer will go through. If they think the price is bad, they'll vote against it, and they'll get their stock back. So it just doesn't seem to me it really does anything except help the independent shareholder to get a better price for his stock. I put an article at the end of my testimony from yesterday's Wall Street Journal by the governor of Indiana talking about this bill, and he gets into the economics and entrenched management some and things like that. I think those questions tend to be ad hoc. They depend upon the company that you're dealing with. Some have entrenched management, some don't. I think fairness to the public shareholders is what this bill tries to address, and I think it does some changes that Mr. Hawley suggested. I think it does a good job. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Gentlemen, I appreciate the time and put you under the gun, but as you know, the decision on the Indiana case was not, came down a little while ago, and I really appreciate your time and consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we'll now move into our public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2710.
Mr. Chairman, do we have the amendments that they brought down in our folders?
No, we just have one copy.
Could we just ask the staff to get them around to us?
Yes.
So we can have a look at them.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. House Bill 2710. Pam Ferrara.
Senator Hill, members of the committee, I'm Pam Ferrara, the Executive Director of Common Cause. I'm here today to urge your support of House Bill 2710. Basically, the bill is a very simple one. It gives the insurance commissioner the authority to compile an annual report on insurance companies doing business in Oregon and the record of complaints, consumer complaints against them. When Commissioner Kulongoski first took this job in January, he was quoted in the paper as saying he wanted to be a consumer advocate, and we think that this is one of the tools he needs in order to do the job. He needs this particular bill in order to publish the record of consumer complaints because, as I'm sure you know, the records are now closed by statute. This is the third session for this bill. Briefly, I just want to tell you what the genesis of it has been because it's really come a long way in three sessions. In 1983 session, what we tried to do was simply lift the confidentiality statute. In 1985 session, we came in with a bill that directed the report to be compiled in a certain way. This session, with the assistance of Commissioner Kulongoski's staff, we have tried a third way to accomplish this goal, and that is to simply give the commissioner the authority to do it by accepting the confidentiality statute, making an exception to it, and then allowing him to have a rulemaking hearing to design the format of the report. As you can tell, there's just one small amendment that was added in the House committee. By the way, it passed the House almost unanimously. And it's to insert the word percentage into line 17. The reason for that is to ensure that the report is done in as fair a way as possible. In other words, there might be a company with a lot of complaints but does an enormous amount of business. So the idea being that the number of complaints would not be taken in a vacuum, but rather have something to compare them to. So that's why that small amendment was added in there. What I have attached to my written testimony, the first page, is the result of a research project that was done back in 83 What it shows you is the status of consumer complaint files in insurance offices in agencies in other states. As you can see, there are a number of other states that have all degrees of open records, so this would not be breaking any kind of new ground. The next attachment is simply a is an editorial that appeared in the Statesman Journal way back in January, where it it editorialized that the legislature's best service to the public would be information about the insurance industry. And we would like to suggest to you that this is a part of that. And then the next attachment is an editorial that appeared in the Oregonian several weeks ago in support of the bill, because their business editor found out about the bill. It's really kind of made a quiet way, I think, through the legislature this time. It's not been a part of the tort reform package because we feel it really is a separate issue. But it is part of the disclosure issue, and we would urge you to give the commissioner the authority to do this, because we think it will help the insurance consumer in Oregon. With that, I will stop, because I think I've covered everything. I'd be happy to try and answer questions.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair, do you have any idea what the percentage refers to? Is it the total policies issued by the company, the number of complaints made in each state against all companies, or the number of complaints found to be valid? I mean, percentage by itself doesn't mean anything to me.
Well,
I realize the House, but...
There was quite a little bit of a discussion on the House side as to how to indicate in the language of the bill that we did not want the commissioner to simply publish a raw number of complaints, because that would indeed be misleading. The intent of putting the word percentage in there, and as I read it, it would read percentage of complaints. It could be the intent was to somehow reflect, and I assume to let the commissioner in the rulemaking hearing best decide how to do this, but to reflect in the fairest way possible the number of complaints as reflected against the size of the company. In other words, either the number of premiums that they wrote, or the total dollar figure of premiums, or some other number. A percentage is always one number divided by another number. The intent is to let the commissioner, through the rulemaking, decide what is the best and fairest way to do that.
Wasn't this concerning the large insurance companies that, of course, because of the size and they have more, that large numbers would make them look bad? And
sure.
The percentage.
Exactly.
Would...
Yeah. And.
Well, Mr. Chair, my question is based upon, say it is percentage of claims. If one company has 1,000 policies and has 100 claims, that's 10%. That's pretty bad. If it has 100,000 policies and has 100 claims, that's 0.1%. That's not too bad. But without specifying, I would read it as the percentage of the complaints received by the division against each insurer. Well, that would be 100%. So I think that...
I agree. I think that what Ms. Farrar said is percentage of complaints, and that is falls right into the same...
If it were percentage of claims, of complaints, the percentage of the total business written in the state by that company, and that would almost have to be a number if you're equating a number of complaints with a number of policies rather than a dollar amount,
mm-hmm.
because you could have a company that writes huge single policies and maybe only 10 of them would have $1 million, as opposed to a company that writes $100 policies and writes thousands of policies. So, I support the idea of this, but I just don't think that it makes sense the way it's written.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just briefly comment, I understand the issue. If the committee would have no problem with leaving the percentage out, I certainly wouldn't. My feeling is, in order to try and figure out at this point what the best method is for reporting those is something I don't have the expertise to do, and you may have. I would feel perfectly comfortable leaving it up to the rulemaking, but...
Well, Mr. Chair, I think percentage is important. Excuse me. I think percentage is important to the purpose of the bill, but we should specify a percentage of what?
Mr. Chairman, my concern is you talk about fairest way, and there's no discussion. There's not the word fair in here. So if you're going to take percentage out, you ought to have, you ought to fully discuss about, you ought to mention the word fair description of complaint.
That would be fine.
Complaint incidents or something like that. I mean, short of fleshing out the percentage,
yeah.
I think you want to come in and say, the commissioner shall establish by rule a fair method of reporting on complaint incidents or something like that. And at least you've got some obligation for the rules to reflect,
sure,
on the issue of fairness. Either way, I'm happy to either work with Senator Simmons' approach, which is to sort of define what we mean by percentage, or try to add another sentence that deals with the whole
percentage of complaints as compared to the number of policies written in the state, something which would give you a measure of...
Chairman Hill, if I might respond briefly to Senator Simmons, we had some discussion on the House side as to whether the number of policies or the dollar figure would be the better figure to use, and there wasn't any decision on which would be the best. I just offer that as a comment.
Well, Mr. Chair, my statement again about some companies write policies in the hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars, and others write them in hundreds, and mm-hmm. so the number of complaint, I think, would bear the closest relationship to the number of policies. Those are the individuals affected.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mr. Fryer, Senator Fry?
Well, I was just going to try this out, see if it made any sense to resolve this. On line 18, instead of the words each insurer, would the words all insurers take care of this so that the report would contain the percentage of complaints received against all insurers?
That'd be a lump sum. You couldn't tell which company.
Mix and match.
That. What you're really after is you want each company to have a documentation of what the complaint record is.
Well, that's
yes.
So that complicates it in a way.
Mr. Ferraro, you understand the concerns of the committee.
I certainly do.
Whatever, if you can come up with some language to address those concerns, it would be much appreciated. And I don't know how much you put into it, but you understand the concerns about fairness and the concern about trying to tie down percentages. And we'll bring this back, but we'd like to get that language.
I'll do that. Sure. Can't think of anything right at the moment.
All right.
Senator,
yes, Senator Fry.
Would it be the committee's consensus, Mr. Chair, to leave that word may in there instead of using the word shall?
I could address that.
Pardon? You couldn't?
I could address that if you...
You could address it.
I think, I mean, I can say something about it. Chairman Hill, members of the committee, my understanding of why the word may is in there is to allow the personnel who will have to implement this to to do it within the time frame that they think they need to do it within. That's what I was told.
Sure, I'm willing to sort of, with the notations of staff and legislative council, have us just plain do this now. She says she doesn't have any words. Senator Simmons just recited some words, which are acceptable to me. I threw out another sort of additional little sentence that we could just jot right down here and get on with it. I think I'm not sure that she's about, she says she doesn't have the words. We probably are as close to coming up with the words as anybody's going to get in the next 2 days.
Well, Senator Hill, Senator Cohen, might I suggest a phrase such as in as fair and objective a way as possible? Would that do it? I think there is certainly a legislative record of intent on this. Short of suggesting exactly what the format of the report would be, you see, that's the trouble we got into last session, was we tried to write the report practically in front of the committee and it got hung up. That's a suggestion.
Senator Simmons?
Well, I think we could solve it to satisfy me by deleting that percentage where it is and adding a phrase at the end, and the percentage of complaints received against an insurer of the number of policies written by that insurer in the state.
Mr. Chairman,
I think that's the information the consumer wants. He wants to know whether State Farm has 50% complaint record and Hartford has 3 or vice versa.
I guess my concern about that is I'm not sure that that's very accurate. What happens if you get somebody just to file a whole bunch of complaints because they're mad at a given company? You can up the number considerably. Also, I suspect, compared to the number of policies that they have, a fairly significant number of complaints is going to be a very modest percentage. I mean, if you have 300,000 insurers and 500 of them write in to moan about something, that's a pretty small percentage. And I think it's very difficult to legislate what would be a fair and equitable way. If we're going to do that, I think it needs to be in the rulemaking process, those who are figuring it out. Plus, it becomes complicated because you can't, I don't think it's fair to say, for example, one insurance company X has X number of complaints, because they probably are going to have complaints in regards to certain types of insurance. Or perhaps if it is general, that's even a little clearer, but a lot of times I think it may be against one particular product of their large product line, and I think it gets real difficult when you start getting specific.
Another thing that he reminded me of, I wonder if the insurance commissioner keeps a record of the number of complaints, of the total number of policies issued by a company, which would throw my suggestion out the window.
Well, we've had testimony that I don't think the insurance commissioner's office knows how many insurance policies are issued in the state. So it gets more complicated yet.
I'll just deal with here. The commission, let's add another sentence that says, the commissioner shall endeavor to make the reporting process as fair and equitable
as can be.
I'm not using possible.
Just leave it there, just to be fair and equitable. And then we'll have to see if they can do that. It's a heck of a challenge, I think.
Does that language meet the concerns of the committee? We'll move it conceptually then.
With the intent that it's to be based somewhat on the relative size and relative number of complaints. I think that's fairness.
It's our... We did not have a page today. Bob had to run down to another committee to get the
Okay, I'll just hand you my bill, and you can yes. and deal with that.
Okay, to take a motion on the bill.
I move the amendments in a conceptual way and run them back past the committee before you file the report.
Senator Cohen moves House Bill 2710 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation with the proviso that the language that she has offered to the effect the commission shall endeavor to make the reporting
fair
and equitable based on the relation and size of the number of complaints. Is there any discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Senator, was that based upon the size and number of complaints, or size of company,
size and, of company.
And number of complaints?
On the size of company?
And number of complaints. Isn't that what you...
We want to add that last part.
Then take it off.
Equitable.
Let's
just
and let the intent say that clearly we want it to
make the reporting to just be fair and equitable.
Period.
Okay.
Can something be fair?
Should be some equitable challenge. I think.
Could be unfair and equitable, or fair and unequitable.
Yeah, we can cover. Any further discussion?
Equitable is
never fair. Clerk will call the roll.
Mayor is not the same as equitable.
Senator Cohen?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye.
Kinnemer?
Aye.
Simmons?
Aye.
Fair is not the same as
equitable.
Aye.
Hills?
Aye.
No.
Equitable. Isn't equitable evenly divided? Okay, thank you.
Fair is even.
Senator Cohen, be the carrier. This language here. I'd like to know how long can the committee members stay? We will go ahead, Bob and I, as long as anyone can say, we'll go ahead and have public hearing. There are certain bills that the leadership has given that need to be heard and have our ducks cleared. Otherwise, we'll have to have hearings this evening.
I thought we were going to have hearings. We're not going to have hearings?
We're going
to have a session
this
evening. The Government Operations Committee starting at 5.
We could be excused from session.
I have...
Okay, I guess I don't want to go away without having...